The Grizzly Berry Cafe podcast is brought to you by our pals over at Gazelle.com. When you've got used consumer electronics that you need to convert into cold, hard, or soft, lukewarm cash, don't sell them, kids. Gazelle them. The Grizzly Berry Cafe is also brought to you by Cobra Eye Radar, a sleek and compact detection unit that provides you with state-of-the-art radar and laser detection technology. Find out more at Cobra.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 157 of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. My name is Mike Quackenbush, making his record-breaking 157th appearance on the show, Clayton Morris.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's been a real treat.
We got a great response from your appearance last week, Clayton. People were really eager to see if we would have you back again. And as promised by our website and other sources, here he is, Clayton Morris.
Thanks so much.
Fox and Friends. That airs on the Fox News Network. Now, over the weekend, Clayton and I teamed up. And we hosted Fox and Friends on the weekend together.
Right, just the two of us.
That's right. And it was an unusual thing. It was filmed from Clayton's mountain estate.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that it really didn't go out to many people.
No, I didn't release that video to many people. I sent it off to Al Jazeera.
Mm.
But they said they had too many audio tapes they needed to get out, so they're not going to do anything with it, which I found a little astounding. They had too many video and audio tapes from Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. That they had to get through first. They said, once we get through all of our Al-Qaeda backlog of tapes, we'll release this Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. Is that how you say it? Yes, that's how you say it.
Mm. Do you think, is it the terrorist market that's keeping tape recorders in business?
I have to say so, right? Because you think those little voice recorder tapes, those little tape players that we used to use just for crank calls, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We would set them next to the phone on speaker, and we'd record our crank calls,
mm-hmm.
Like Jerky Boys style.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some. I still have some of those old tapes.
Do you? But yeah. Nothing to play them on.
right. Yeah. I have no way of actually playing those tapes, but I still keep them for posterity.
when that type of tape makes a big comeback. And, you know, they re-release those devices that can play them.
Did you see, though, that recently there was, they said, hey, don't count the cassette tape just yet. It's making a comeback. Apparently there's some mm-hmm. company that's jumping on the, hey, we want to, in a retro kind of a way, let's bring back the cassette tape. Mm. Now, you love the cassette tape. You still keep, you have like a whole drawer of like mixtapes you've made.
Yeah, sure I do.
Yeah.
Why would I just throw them away? My stereo still has a cassette deck.
Right. Really? Oh, yeah, I mm-hmm. guess you do, yeah.
It does. Well, it was actually an add-on. I had to take a Phillips head screwdriver and wedge this Sonos bridge thing open.
And then stick it in there?
I just put the cassette right in there. And you got to really put your ear close to hear it, but I think it's in there.
You think there's music actually playing. Hey, speaking of the Sonos, I'm glad you brought that up. You want to tell folks about what we're going to do today? And we got to think of a little bit of a trivia question from a previous episode. You're good at
trivia
that.
Trivia question. Right on.
So,
okay, well, the answer is RoboCop. I'm going to think of the question later.
Okay.
So here's what's going on. Our friends over at Sonos that make awesome audio systems have given us a prize pack that's worth about $750, right? This is nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
It features the new Sonos Play 3, the Sonos Bridge. It's an amazing prize pack that they've given us. And now I've got to tell you, I'm not exactly certain of the rules of how you can go about winning this, but one member of the Loyal Egghead Army will win this incredible Sonos sound system, and Clayton will fill you in on the particulars later on. Remember, the answer to the trivia question will be RoboCop.
You're really throwing everyone off with that trivia setup. That's not exactly how trivia usually works. Actually, then they need to come up with a question like Jeopardy.
Oh, you wanted it to be like a secret?
Right. Well, not a secret. I wanted them to have to dig through one of our previous episodes and find the answer.
Okay.
So
I see. I didn't understand. So
sometimes you need to really. That's why I'm a guest host on this show, because
okay.
You
now
really
it's starting
to
make sense
down.
For me.
Right.
Okay. So what I'd like for you to do is go back then and listen to episode 97 of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, which is called Clayton and Mike Go to See Tears for Fears, and I want you to figure out what band we saw in that episode. Okay. That's going to be the trivia question. You can win the Sonos system. Details on that and a whole lot more coming in this episode of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, hosted by Mike Quackenbush with special guest star Clayton Morris. Now, Clayton and I got together. In fact, we even brought our families along. As I said, we were up at Clayton's Mountain Estate number 3.
which is adjacent to a man-made lake called Lake Clayton. And we, among other things, Clayton, among other things that we did, we ate some cookies and we watched some television.
We did. Those cookies were delicious, by the way. It's like a white chocolate that my wife made. Mmm.
Right. And let me tell you something. When she later revealed that she'd had dark chocolate chips but withheld them.
Right.
I was sort of like, what's going on here?
But remarkably, it didn't stop you from eating seven of them.
No, I didn't say that it stopped me, did I? You don't put words in my mouth.
No, there's not enough room because there's too many cookies in there.
I knew that was coming. So here's what we did. This is coming to you right from us. We watched, did Clayton and I, and other people were subjected to it as well. We watched the pilot episode of the highly acclaimed AMC series Breaking Bad, which stars Bryan Cranston, probably best known for playing the dad in Malcolm in the Middle. And this thing has won like an enormous amount of awards, all but universal critical acclaim did Breaking Bad. And I really liked it as well, even though we only watched the first episode.
Yeah, I did as well. And it's amazing to me that this season, this series is entering its fourth season, and I'd never heard of it until like the past 2 months. Mm-hmm. People have been tweeting us and saying, hey, have you ever seen Breaking Bad? If Breaking Bad was trending really high this week on Twitter and everything as the fourth season begins. So it's amazing to me that it's in the fourth season, and I've never heard of it. I really enjoyed it. And so we thought, you know, we had done movie talk. We did some music talk with They Might Be Giants. We did all the Batman movies. Why don't we dive into and start going through the first, second, third seasons of Breaking Bad? Now, how do you want to lay this out? And we can talk about it here on the show.
Right. Well, here's what – now, this first season, if you want to get in on this with us, is only 7 episodes long. They kind of grow as the season progresses. And I also want to warn you about this upcoming – the producers have come out and said that the 5th season will be the final season of Breaking Bad. That was just announced in the last couple of weeks. So the next season, I guess, the 5th season, will be the finale of the series, which certainly makes sense given a premise put forth in this pilot episode, which you'll discover if you're new to Breaking Bad. So I think what we should probably do here is maybe, for example, we won't talk about this next week, but maybe by the next week, it seems reasonable that we would be able to watch the rest of the season, don't you think?
Okay, so we catch up and we watch the entire first season, which is only 7 episodes long, and it's available on Netflix streaming, by the way.
Right.
So that makes it very easy. All of the seasons, season 1, 2, and 3, are available on Netflix streaming, so you can catch it there. I'm sure it's on Amazon as well and whatever. But yeah, I think okay. So in three weeks, yeah, we'll have watched the entire first season, and we'll chat about the first season upcoming on the Grizz. That sounds like a good thing. Yeah.
So we're going to give that a whirl. That seems very intriguing. We also watched the first 2 episodes combined into 1, first episode of Terra Nova. What was your impression of Terra Nova?
I thought, you know, as we finished and wrapped up that night, of course, I kept nodding off. Yeah. You did.
After Clayton had eaten about 40 cookies.
Right.
His belly swelled.
And my insulin levels spiked, and I passed out on the couch. But I have to say, you know, after the fourth dinosaur attack scene, I sort of felt like I'd seen it all before, right? So I nodded off for a few minutes here and there, and I'd sort of wake back up again.
Came back for the next dinosaur attack.
Right, and I was like, okay, just wake me when the next dinosaur attack, and I'll go back to sleep now. So when I got up, I said to you, I felt like it was ham-handed. That was my initial feeling to it. And I felt like, so when you watch Jurassic Park, right? Well, let's go back and give a little backstory here of what the show is about. I think every network right now is kind of struggling to find their new Lost, and they're all trying different things, right? And I think this is probably the closest successor to Lost, and it misses the mark, I think. But it's the idea that 65 million years in the future, the Earth is way too polluted, so everyone has to, you know, use these rebreathers. It's like face masks to keep them, you know, so that they can breathe well enough. It's all dreary. It looks very much like WALL-E, right? It's like almost like post-apocalyptic, although it's not. And there's this new project called the Terra Nova Project, which, with little explanation in the show, So, you know, this program exists. This Terra Nova program just exists out of the clear blue sky. And if you're selected, you get to go back in time. What is it, like 65 million years back in time?
85 million. Oh. Not like it really matters, but 85, I believe, is the number.
So you go back in time, and they've set up a camp, right? And there's dinosaurs, because it's way back when. The air is clean, and, you know, so this one family gets sort of selected to go back in time. And that's where things ensue. So you take it from there.
All right. So here's what happened. There aren't enough over-budget, really expensive, dramatic series on TV anymore. Someone gave this elevator pitch to an executive. Hey, I want to make a show that's like Lost meets Jurassic Park. And somebody said, I'm going to give you a lot of money to do it. That's what you need. That's what you need to know about Terra Nova. I'm going to summarize Terra Nova for you like this. We all saw the trailers or the teasers or whatever that were out there, right? The promos that were supposed to be hyping the arrival of Terra Nova, which you could see were the direct child of that elevator pitch. I want to make a show that's like Lost meets Jurassic Park. Here's a lot of money. They made some great promos that told that story. Here's the thing about trailers, teasers, like music videos or things like that that are supposed to get you excited about things that are upcoming. They are a lot like a girl that you glance from across a bar, right? Anything can look good at a glance.
Right.
Anything can look good in one of these teaser trailers, right? Like even the Green Hornet with Seth Rogen could almost look acceptable in a teaser trailer.
Almost, but even that was pushing. I thought the trailer was pretty bad. Yeah.
Almost. The problem with Terra Nova is it's the girl that takes its clothes off too fast.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, there is, and here's why.
Right.
In the first two-hour mega super episode of Terra Nova, it takes its clothes off too fast. It gives you the full money too quickly.
Yes.
It comes right out and says, we are trying desperately to be lost, right? There's this other rebel colony somewhere else on the planet. There are these secret writings on rocks that only one person knows the meaning of. My son is lost. I haven't seen him in years, but I think he's still out there somewhere. All of it, you gotta keep some of your clothes on, ladies. What I'm saying is like, they're trying so hard to give you so much up front. What happens in those 2 hours of Terra Nova would have lasted the whole season of Lost.
Right.
There's so many reveals, there's so much setup, like, chill out.
I said to my wife the next morning, I said, you know, what struck me about that show last night was that they should have spent maybe the first three, maybe even four episodes, or even like the whole first season, still on the planet, or still on Earth as it was 85 million years in the future, right? Mm-hmm. Corrupted, smoggy,
right.
Politically unstable, criminals running amok, all of that. How did we get there? And then the end of the first season, you arrive at Terra Nova, maybe, mm-hmm. right? That's the payoff at the end. Instead, you're on the planet, you're on the smoggy planet for like 30 minutes, and then you're on Terra Nova for the next hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then when you arrive there, like, oh, really? So it's politics at play here, and there's not enough of a backstory for me to care why this Terra Nova project even exists. Mm-hmm. It'd be fascinating to see why it got to that point, the point at which this project was created to take people back in time, but it, you know, just wasn't there.
So, Terra Nova, too much, and I think the fact that I get the feeling like they're never going back to, you know, the dirty dystopian future, and the fact that we're going to clearly be, you know, in this very claustrophobic setting of, like, the fenced-in colony in the past with the constant dinosaur attacks, and I'm not all that intrigued by that. The characters are really, like, broad, obvious, you know, like, stereotypical type characters. They're exactly what you think. Like, you know, if someone put you in a room and were like, I want you to write this whole show and you've only got half an hour.
Right.
This is what you would come up with. And really,
you come up with the wayward teen, right, in the family.
Of course, the rebellious teen boy is at odds with his father and, like, and thank God, you know, that they only managed to get the most attractive of people from the dystopian future into the past. You know?
I know. I mean, you really don't want ugly people in the past, right? So
no,
you get all
to
these
be eaten by dinosaurs.
These beautiful soldiers, right? There's like the one of the security guards who clearly looks like he just stepped out off the set of Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
Who's there?
Or like out of an Abercrombie and Fitch catalog.
I know. I kept thinking that. That's funny you say that. I kept
waiting for him to like teasingly pull up his shirt a little and reveal his abdominals.
spraying too much cologne and loud music so you can't hear yourself think right. When you walk near his house.
Looking wistfully at the beach. His hair is wet. Anyway, the most interesting premise put forth in Terra Nova is this, that this is what we're watching now is like the 10th pilgrimage, right? The 10th group of people that have been sent to the far distant past. To get away from the overpopulation issue that's in the future. And they talk about the fact that the sixth pilgrimage, or as they're calling them, the Sixers, led
right.
by Dr. Julius Erving, they are separatists. And the head guy who's, you know, just this sort of like generic commander-type leader guy who's exactly what you expect and apparently was an avatar –
I'm fairly certain he plays the main sort of bad guy in Avatar with the giant scar down his face, and he's awesome in Avatar. James Cameron picked the right guy. So he's almost like the commander in Avatar, but like the lighter version.
Mm. With a very well-kempt beard despite being in a dinosaur era.
Right.
They set up the idea that he thinks – someone from the future deliberately sent these people back to, like, undermine him or overthrow him. And this is really, I thought, the only interesting premise of the whole show. They ask him something like about why he doesn't ask for help or why he doesn't send a message back to the future, because I think they have some method of communicating back and forth. You know, they must know when more people are coming to Terra Nova, etc.
But they can't go back, right?
They can't go back, but they seem to be able to communicate somehow. And they did sort of vaguely set that up. There was like a beacon that allows them to track where they are in the fractured time-space continuum. And the sci-fi is very thin, by the way. Like, it's like covered in like two sentences, and you just have to accept it. Like, oh, we walked through this blue portal in 85 million years in the past. Everything's okay, right? Let's not talk about that anymore.
And the way that they reveal these plot points are annoying, too, because it's like the teen girl who explains quickly to the other teen in the family who's dumb, right? And so she's the smart, precocious, sort of almost like Hermione Granger type from Harry Potter, where she's like, Jim, you mean to tell me you don't know what that beacon is? Oh, come on. There's like a little statue with this beacon on it, like in the center square of Terra Nova. And she's like, oh, that beacon? That beacon just happens to represent, of course, the first man-made journey into space-time continuum. Of course, why wouldn't you know that? It's this cheap plot device, you know, to explain all of this sci-fi in like in 30 seconds or less. We don't want to bore you with the sci-fi, so we'll spew it in 30 seconds.
Yeah. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying about the girl who takes her clothes off too fast. Like, do we really need that in the first the first painful 2-hour super pilot? Like, I don't think that we did. But in any event, as I said, there seems to be a method of communication between Terra Nova and the far distant dystopian future, which is at least as interesting as Dinosaur Land.
Right.
And the guy in charge, Commander, whatever his name is, I don't know, it didn't stick with me.
Taylor,
you know, military stereotype number one. He says the reason he doesn't choose to communicate or ask for, like, extra medical supplies from the future or whatever is because he's not sure who in the future he can trust, because obviously someone up there masterminded this sixth pilgrimage of separatists to try and undermine him. So that was very interesting to me. But that was really it. Like, the rest of it was sort of like this watered-down elevator pitch. I want to make a show. This Lost meets Jurassic Park. Here's a lot of money. And that's it. That's Terra Nova for you. And I was not, after suffering through that first one with, like, the painfully written exposition and, like, the bad characterization and everything else, I thought, I don't really need to watch any more of this.
Right. No, absolutely. I'm done. It sort of reminded me. I wanted to give, for instance, like, I watched the first episode and first two episodes of The Cape.
Yeah.
I gave that second episode, you know, and it wasn't terrible. But of course, that was canceled after like four episodes or whatever, or maybe even fewer than that. But you and I placed a bet. You thought this would only last seven episodes, Terra Nova.
That's what I think.
I think, well, it's hard to say.
The cancellation will come by seven episodes.
Okay, you think seven episodes.
And I think for reasons that we talked about, right? You know this series has to be incredibly expensive to produce.
Right. I think five episodes.
Five? Because you know they're on three. They're already on three.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Do we have any ratings numbers for it? Because I was thinking, you know, we just have seen the first episode. Okay, so five, seven. Well, it's hard to say. If they've made it three... You know, typically a show will be canceled after like five episodes or three episodes. So, and I look at, you know, Charlie's Angels, that new Charlie's Angels was already canceled.
Right, yeah.
Did you see that?
I did see that.
I mean, how do you, what amazes me is that these guys, I can't understand how they already cancel a show that, you know, they cancel a show that quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. If Seinfeld never would have made it. Mm. The first season was abysmal for ratings for Seinfeld.
Right on.
It really wasn't until the third season it hit its stride. Mm. So you really don't know. I mean, why can't they just take some information from executives and say, hey, you know, tweak this, do that, let's improve upon it. Instead, it's we see what it's going to be. We're done.
Yeah. I couldn't find any information about the ratings, but I can tell you this, that I think maybe the series has already been completely filmed. Because this was pushed off. It was originally supposed to premiere back in May, but they held it off so it could air together, you know, all together, the entire season. So it's entirely possible.
Well, maybe it'll be a surprise hit. You know, maybe you and I will both be wrong, and it won't be canceled within the first few episodes. And instead, it'll live on, and it'll have like six seasons to it.
I don't know. Right now, it's averaging $4 million an episode to produce. It also takes far longer than the average television series in post-production. It takes 6 weeks, whereas most average three because of all the special effects and everything else. It did, however, earn this unique distinction. The second episode retained 100% of its audience. It was the best retention by a new series this year.
Wow. So
that's very interesting. One thing that
kind of
made me laugh.
What do you mean by
that?
The first episode from beginning to end?
It said in its second the second week on Fox, this show retained 100% of its demo rating, which is the best retention by a new series. Well, there have been some positive reviews. Obviously, some people think this is the most exciting new show on television. The Boston Herald reviewed it as such. They said, "This is Stargate SGU by Dr. Seuss." So. There you have that. This year, Sam Wollaston of The Guardian wrote, "The script is as corny and cheesy as a family-sized portion of cheesy corn nachos."
That's exactly how I felt about it. I thought some of the ham-handedness and the wife-husband dialogue is pretty bad.
Yeah.
The teen stuff drives me nuts.
Right. This was one of the just many, many minor objections of which if I'd taken notes, it would be like a novel's length. The husband had been imprisoned for at least 2 years.
Right.
He's reunited with his family, escapes the dystopian future into the past. They get there. It's their first night back together after 2 years. But because their daughter has fallen asleep in their bed, he just kisses his wife goodnight and goes to bed on the couch. They haven't been together in 2 years.
Right. You're getting some hanky-panky that night. He says, "Well, I guess I'll just sleep on the couch." Really? She couldn't go out on the couch as well?
Mm-hmm. Nah.
No, I'm just going to sleep next to our little baby Lily. Mm-hmm. And she's like 5 years old. She's already asleep. And you know what? Why even bother going on the couch? Maybe baby Lily won't even notice.
The whole thing. There were so many little things like that.
Like the little girl who, like, plays with the Brontosaurus.
Right, yeah. You know, there's always got to be that, right? Like, ripped from Jurassic Park, like the innocent interaction of the child and the benevolent herbivore.
Right. Like, benevolent herbivore. You know what's amazing, though? I was thinking about the difference between Jurassic Park and this, right? Because it's, you know, it's similar in that setup. And I thought, why does Jurassic Park have heart? Mm. And this felt like it didn't.
Right.
There was a heart to, you cared about these characters. Mm-hmm. You cared about the reveal of seeing the dinosaurs for the first time. You cared about the family.
Right.
Who then finds themselves within Jurassic Park, you know. What is it? Why? What was different about the two? Mm-hmm. Where this family, I didn't care if the little girl got eaten by a Brontosaurus.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really that interested.
Nor was I. I don't know. You know, obviously Jurassic Park has an incredible, sweeping soundtrack to it. You know, you can never underestimate the power of that in creating, like, a great cinematic experience. And maybe something like Dinosaurs, which are massive creatures if you're new to the Grizz, are best reserved for the big screen. Like, maybe some of the charm of that is lost seeing them on television. And, you know, now Jurassic Park, right? That movie's, what, 17 years old? 18 years old? Something like that?
God, is it that old?
It's got it, at least, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's old, yeah.
Those dinosaurs, you know, that was the first time I think we'd ever really seen them rendered in that way. They were incredibly believable.
Sure.
And you know, when you see the dinosaurs on Terra Nova, like, you're really conscious of the fact that you're seeing a special effect.
Yeah, to be sure.
You know,
one thing I did like about this show with the dinosaurs is that they gave each of the dinosaur groupings sort of personalities, mm-hmm. right? Like, yes. Oh, you don't want to go to that portion of the forest because that's where, what was it, the slashers live?
Right. They were a gang.
Right.
They wore red bandanas.
The type of dinosaur that, you know, uses its tail, right, to smash things and slash things. And then there was, like, another group of dinosaurs that you don't want to go near them because that's another group, whatever. You know, in Jurassic Park, they're just random dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to revisit that. And I'm sad. You know, I wanted to find a show that had the appeal of a Lost again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you think about the whole first season of Lost, right? They didn't discover the hatch until the final episode.
Right. Right. And that, I think, overall, was the most compelling plot device on Lost, the hatch.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Like, that summer, waiting for it to come back in the fall, and all you really saw of the hatch, right, was that light come out at the end of season one.
Yeah, the little mirror, or the little window.
Yeah. To contrast it, if you were taking these plot pieces and inserting them into Terra Nova, by the end of the first half hour, they would have blown the hatch door open.
Right. You would have met the people that live inside the hatch.
Yeah, like,
and they would have had some little girl explain to you what all the numbers mean.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, right. Like in this horribly written exposition dialogue piece. Yeah, absolutely. So, Terra Nova has failed to win us over, as I said. It's from across the bar in a glance, Terra Nova looked all right, but Terra Nova took its clothes off too quickly.
But Breaking Bad is teasing me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see where Breaking Bad is going, you know, and so really intrigued by that. Very well done first episode, and some great writing, really original storytelling,
mm-hmm.
and a character who's incredibly unique. I cannot name another character on television as unique as the father in Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably no doubt why it has won so many awards. It seems really well written, and it's compelling. Like, this guy who, you know, is basically just, like, abandoning his, you know, pre-existing life. He's a chemistry teacher and works part-time at the local car wash. Like, you totally go on the journey with him. You totally follow him through it. And I thought, like, in a weird way, it was obviously done to great effect. When he's being given this horrible diagnosis by his doctor, he's just, like, transfixed by this mustard stain on the doctor's lapel.
Right.
And it just kind of, like, all these bizarre quirks of him are something that you can totally relate to. And so that's really a testament, I guess, to the acting ability of Bryan Cranston, who plays the lead character there, Walter, in that even as he makes these choices that maybe you and I would not make, you know, you understand every step of his journey, and it's really communicated, and not necessarily through ham-fisted exposition either.
Right.
You know, he really tells a lot of the story just with, like, his eyebrows, like, his facial expressions tell you so much of the story.
I think that's a good point. You know, what I love about, and one of my favorite authors is Michael Chabon. He often talks about, and David Mamet talks about this as well, that if you have to explain to someone a plot point, then you failed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did I get that accurate? If you have to have another character explain what's going on,
mm-hmm.
then you failed as a writer.
Mm.
And I feel like in Breaking Bad, there's no one there. There's no There's no narrator. There's no one explaining to you what this character is feeling and going through. It's written well enough so that the character's actions speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. Within Terra Nova, you have this little girl sort of explaining to the other idiot teen brother why this space capsule is here, and you know, the military commander explaining to someone else why he's keeping an eye on this new father who just showed up into Terra Nova, and he's kind of keeping an eye on him, and he's explaining to the other guy, you know, wouldn't he just keep an eye on him? Why do we? And we can see him looking through binoculars at him, right? We get the message. Why do we need to have him explaining to someone else that he's keeping an eye on this new guy?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Stark contrast in writing between the two.
Very much so.
I will say, I'll talk a little bit about The Walking Dead in just a minute. Because I just saw that season 2 premiered last night. So on Sunday night. So I'll talk about that in a second. But first, I want to thank our first show sponsor this week, our friends over at Gazelle.com. Because, boy, just got the numbers this morning from Apple, and they have sold 4 million iPhone 4Ss in 3 days. Pretty remarkable. And that means a lot of people were upgrading from their 3GS. That seems to be the way it was going. A lot of people upgrading from their 3G or the 3GS. And, of course, as they're upgrading, they're getting their – they need to figure out a way to cash in on the – you know, cash in and get some money back from the new phone. So they go to Gazelle.com, and you get cash for your used electronics. So you type in what kind of electronic you have, what kind of gadget you have there, and then they'll let you know what – you tell them what condition it's in, right? It's in perfect condition, nearly flawless. It's got a few scratches on it, et cetera, et cetera. And then they'll let you know how much they're going to pay you. Well, they'll even pay the shipping for you. They'll even send you a box. Have you ever done this? Have you gotten the boxes in the mail, or do you opt to just print out the shipping label?
One time I got the box, and I was stunned. It came like the next day. Like I couldn't even figure out how that was possible. It came to my house with such rapidity. But I've done both. I like the prepaid shipping label because it's kind of your call, right? It depends on how you want to ship it to them, and. Everything about the experience is just really, really positive. I think that's one of the things that you know, can be tough to verbalize about when you deal with a company. And everything you do with Gazelle, like, they make it as easy and as customer friendly for you as possible. And you'll learn, you know, if you haven't from hearing us talk about it, you'll learn this through your own experience too, that they're just honest. You know, if you end up sending stuff in and it turns out that it's worth more than what they thought, well, they're going to give you the extra money. That's happened to me. It's happened to Clayton. So, you know, there's a number of great reasons to use Gazelle. I mean, not only do we all need a couple extra bucks with the holidays looming large, right? And whether you want a paper check, or you want it in your PayPal, you want an Amazon gift card, or even if you just want to donate it to charity, right. You know, whatever the case might be, well, that might be a large motivating factor. One of the things that's going to keep you coming back to Gazelle time and time again is the fact that the process really, it couldn't be much simpler. I don't know that there's room for a whole lot of simplification here. And they're just incredibly friendly. They're very communicative. You know what's going on. It's not like they're, you know, off somewhere in a panic room, you know, isolated with your gadgets doing God knows what with them. Like, you know exactly what's happening every step of the way. And it's just, that's the kind of experience that you want. You know, I think everybody's always, you're always a little tentative when you discover something new like that online, right? Everybody knows some horror story, or you have some friend, right, who probably got scammed on eBay or whatever. And none of that applies to your experience with Gazelle.com. You can find out for yourself. Go over and see him. Gazelle.com is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as is the World Wide Web. You can go there anytime you want. Get rid of those gadgets. You'll be glad you did. Tell them that the Clayton Morris Podcasting Empire sent you. That's on the penultimate checkout screen, because we need the credit.
Yeah, certainly do. And hey, we don't mention this very often, but go over to our iTunes page. On iTunes, we've got a brand new storefront at Grizzly Productions. All of our shows live now on iTunes in one handy-dandy location. Give us a 5-star review if you haven't already, if you're new to the show. That helps other people discover the show. Just give us a 5-star review, write up one little sentence about why you like the show, and that'll help other people discover it. And stick around towards the end of today's episode. We should have a guilty pleasure song we're going to serve up to you, one that came in, which I will absolutely poo-poo right now, which is Billy Ray Cyrus' Achy Breaky Heart. Because there's nothing pleasurable about that song.
That's a key component of the guilty pleasure.
Yeah. And also coming up at the maybe before we do the guilty pleasure song, we'll tell you about our big Sonos giveaway and how you have to it's very, very easy to enter, and we'll pick a random egghead to win the big prize pack. So that's coming up. I'm going to have Mike think of a trivia question from a previous episode that you'll have to go back and listen to. Mm-hmm. So you have to dig up a previous episode, maybe only a few episodes ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, or maybe it's, yeah, maybe we'll pull something from the Flansburg episode. What do you think? That'd be a good one. I'll have
Could
you
be.
Think
I don't
about
know that we talked about RoboCop there. Listen, so we have gotten some guilty pleasure suggestions floating in here. Rudo Awakening has sent in The Waitresses, I Know What Boys Like, which is a very catchy song, but one of the worst videos of the 80s.
Yeah.
So even though I don't know that I'd put my windows up, the video is so embarrassing, I think that might qualify as a guilty pleasure. I saw a couple people suggested this one today. Islands in the Stream, the duet of Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton.
Hmm.
That one, I have to admit, that's up there. That might be a tough one to top there. John Cafferty's Hearts on Fire was recommended to us by Synergy Comic. Izzy2287 once again asserts that the Bee Gees' You Should Be Dancing should be played as he did the week before. We also saw Cyndi Lauper, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. That's an interesting choice, and it is kind of guilty. Cyndi, by the way, C-Y-N-D-I, I believe is how she spelled her stage name, the_click_army. How about this one? This one came in here from Burlesque. Barbie Girl by Aqua. Wasn't that recently voted the worst song of the 90s?
I think you're right. I think it was the worst song of the 90s.
Mm-hmm. I believe that was in Rolling Stone. Hey, along those lines, did you not say that we would be talking about Rolling Stone compiled a list of the worst songs of the 80s recently?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that. I'm going to do some digging and pull that list up. I just wanted to tell you quickly about The Walking Dead, because I know I'm sure we have a lot of listeners have watched The Walking Dead. Have you? Mm-hmm. You haven't started the show yet, have you?
No, I have not. I have not. But I know that Robert Kirkman does good stuff, so and certainly his comics are highly acclaimed for good reason. He had an outstanding run on Ultimate X-Men. He also did Marvel Zombies. He's, as you can guess, he's quite the zombie guy because his show, spun out of his graphic novel, The Walking Dead, has something to do with zombies.
It does. And the first season was great. And so my sister hadn't seen it. She's visiting along with my folks. And so she'd never seen The Walking Dead. I put on the first episode of season one last night so she could get some understanding of the characters and where they're all going. And then the season premiere of season two of The Walking Dead launched on Sunday night, and boy, it was entertaining. But, you know, like some mixed reviews on Twitter, as there are wont to be, right? Some people saying that it didn't deliver, some people saying it totally delivered, totally enjoyable. And, you know, it was really, really entertaining and just came out, gripped you right away as you're sort of led to believe that they're sort of stuck on this roadway where, spoiler alert, I mean, that's not a big spoiler, but there's like tons of zombies that end up pouring down the street, almost like a herd of zombies that come sort of pouring down the street. And some new twists as certain folks go missing and having to get them back. And they're doing a great job. And unlike Terra Nova, this whole episode, and it was a 90-minute season premiere for season two, it held my attention the entire time. I mean, it was gripping. And this whole episode of The Walking Dead would have been the first 10 minutes of Terra Nova.
Mm.
I mean, it was that fast. Mm-hmm. But the way, you know, it's the creepiness that you just never know who's around that door, right? You never know. Yeah, we run out of gas, so we need to, like, siphon some gas off from these other cars here for a minute. But you don't know in that few minutes, is someone walking down the street? You know, someone hear you? Did some zombie in the woods, you know, just walking, waddling out of the woods? So characters are really, really well done. You care about certain characters. You sort of despise other ones. You have respect for other characters. There's one guy in it who I'm a fan of. I think his name is Daryl, who's the guy who's like a bit of a loose cannon.
Mm-hmm.
He's like an archer. So he's like Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
And he's fantastic. And it's brilliant because the zombies in The Walking Dead, when they hear loud noises, gunshots, a car alarm goes off, they sort of come to that area. They congregate where there's loud noises.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it very difficult for you to use your gun on a regular basis, which I like. You know, in the other zombie films, that was never an issue, right? At least I don't think from zombie literature or zombie lore that loud noises aren't really, don't really matter. Mm-hmm. I think they just kind of sense where you are and come after you. So it's kind of fun, you know, in this that you're sort of limited in your ability to use the gun, you know, and when they hear a gunshot, they'll come to you. So obviously this guy who's like Hawkeye, he's such a marksman with the bow that he uses somebody. He always pulls back the arrow after he shoots someone. So he's got like an unlimited supply of arrows that he just keeps grabbing after he's fired one through the head of a zombie. But it was brutal. I mean, and the episode was particularly gruesome, so much so that my mom, my sister, and my wife all had Walking Dead nightmares last night. So mission accomplished.
Well done. Well done.
Well done. So good stuff. And I'm excited to see where season two rolls now. I mean, I think you need to get on. I think you need to get
on. And that's an AMC series also, right?
Yeah. I mean, man, they're doing some good stuff. What, AMC's got what, Mad Men?
Right, which I don't watch. The Killing is from AMC, is it not?
Oh, yeah. When does that come back?
Let me see if I can find an answer to that, because that is a very good question. They also had, I don't know why you killed this on us, Rubicon, which was short-lived. And my God, if there was ever a series that screamed for a second season, it was Rubicon. And then they just axed it.
I thought you weren't a big fan of Rubicon. I thought you kind of gave it up.
Rubicon... it's really slow to get out of the gates. You know, there's maybe 13 episodes, I want to guess, of Rubicon.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, and I'm sure if you go back and listen to the Grizzes as I was watching it week to week and was explaining it, that you know that they're doing an enormous amount of setup. And really, like, first several episodes, like, nothing's happening other than setup for later on. But as it starts to really come together in the last couple episodes and things start to happen very rapidly... you realize how artfully they put the web in place without you realizing it. And I really enjoyed that about Rubicon. And the slower-paced storytelling was reminiscent of Lost to me, you know, again, in stark contrast to Terra Nova. So I miss that. And it had a really interesting cast, did Rubicon. You know, other than Inspector Sledgehammer, David Raish or Rashke, however his name is said, other than him, like, it was virtually all people that you didn't know. Now, real quick, The Killing, the U.S. TV series The Killing, which is based on a Danish television series, which is, you know, it's virtually identical in that way. The first season aired on AMC, and the second season, which will contain 13 episodes here, does it have the start date or it does not? Huh.
Didn't AMC...
It just says there is a second season, and it's 13 episodes, but a start date does not exist.
And people were furious at the ending of season one, as you know. I'm excited, though. I love that show. But didn't AMC used to be American Movie Classics?
Right. Sure.
Do they still go by that name, or
just AMC now. You know?
Like just KFC?
Right, like WWE. They're no longer World Wrestling Entertainment.
How do you go from
just WWE
showing American Movie Classics to creating new television shows? I don't get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says here, it says, you know, they no longer refer to themselves as American Movie Classics, just as AMC.
Total shift. It's like a you know, a rock station suddenly going country. Just overnight, flip the switch. What, my favorite station's no longer playing Led Zeppelin, now it's playing Brad Paisley. What happened? Mm-hmm. What happened?
Let's get drunk and screw.
So that's Jimmy Buffett. So yeah, I wanted to pull up that list, right? And I really disagree with this list. Now, this is Rolling Stone readers that contributed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
Readers poll the 10 worst songs of the 1980s.
Mm.
So. Let's dive into it. Number 10 on the list. See if you agree with this. Pretty terrible video. And, of course, you've heard it if you've ever been Rickrolled by anyone. 2008, of course, it made a bit of a comeback with the Rickrolling. Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley is number 10 on the list.
Okay. I can understand why people think that. I'm not, like, vehemently opposed to Rick Astley. I'm not going to...
Yeah, I don't know that it's that terrible.
Right. Yeah, the video though, a lot of that's a really hard thing I think for our generation is sometimes to separate those songs from the videos.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because there's like that one black guy who looks like Urkel who does like the spin move, you know, where he throws the stuff up in the air and catches it upon the spin coming back.
Spin move.
So I remember that distinctly from the video. Let's see, number 9 on the list. I loved this song growing up, and boy, did I.
I'm putting on the Ritz by Taco.
Exactly.
Is it?
It is.
I knew that just because of the way you said that, because Clayton really did love Putting on the Ritz. That was up there with Abracadabra for you.
Oh, yeah. And I was thrilled to learn that Abracadabra was not on the list, at least to these idiots.
We would have had to storm their offices, Rolling Stone.
But Putting on the Ritz, do you think that rises to the level of being number 9 on the top 10 worst songs of the 80s?
No, I don't think so. And I think that might be another case. Like, that has a really rotten video, if you remember that guy.
Playing the piano.
Right, the guy.
Tuxedo.
His name's Taco. that's his name. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if I had – one of my very favorite songs of the entire 1980s is Steppin' Out by Joe Jackson. But if I had first discovered that in conjunction with the horrible music video that goes with it,
right,
I probably would not like that song that much. The same is true of Always Something There to Remind Me by Naked Eyes. Like, that video almost ruins the song.
I didn't realize this, and just doing a little reading on Putting on the Ritz. Taco, it's not even his song, apparently. Irving Berlin wrote
right,
the song,
right, sure, of course, yeah.
Which I didn't realize. 1929. Everybody from Ella Fitzgerald, I did know that, to Fred Astaire, to Judy Garland recorded it. So then it was this 1980s version.
And he's German, right, Taco? He's a German guy?
I think so. Not quite sure. Doesn't say. But
I think that's where tacos are from, so it seems like a good conclusion to draw.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Okay, this song I can't stand, and number 8 on the list. And I have to say, this is one of those songs that always makes it onto one of those 80s compilations, right? Mm. You know, when you see him like the...
Right. The Mickey by Tony Basil.
Giddy Up, that's the song.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. You're on a roll here.
You're right. It is. It's always on those 80s comps.
I mean, there's always like a Video Killed the Radio Star, Mickey. And these are all the songs that, for me... when people think of 80s music, typically they think of this stuff. This is the stuff that of the 80s music I can't stand.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'm a Police fan from the 80s. I'm a, you know, I'm a Cars fan. I'm a fan of the good 80s music, not this garbage.
Yeah. The ones that are organized chronologically, too, right before you get Video Killed the Radio Star with the Buggles, you sometimes get Pop Music by M on all those 80s comps. You know, and that was kind of a border. You know, a fringe.
We always get Dexy's Midnight Runners. You'll get Come On Eileen on those. That same kind of, you know, I don't know. Who produces that?
Sunglasses at Night is going to be on there. You know, Timbuk 3, The Future's So Bright, I've Got to Wear Shades.
If you're lucky, you'll get
She Blinded Me with Science.
Right, right. Always on there.
Right.
Video Killed a Radio Star. 99 Luftballons.
Yes. Sometimes Take My Breath Away by Berlin is on those. Anyway, so what's next on the list?
So this song, I'm sort of surprised that this is on here, but Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Okay. Now, I do know that people have a really strong aversion to that song. Do you remember when they were doing – MTV did this several years ago where they were going to allow fans to vote for – it was either like 1 or 10 of the music videos for songs they hated the most, and they would never play them again. They actually burned the masters on a live program. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. And this was one of them?
That was, like, doing really well in the polling. And I thought, wow, like, who hates that song that much?
I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I think when people just don't like to be happy, right? They don't like to be encouraged by others to be happy.
Yeah.
So when there's a song written about it and you're hearing it, you're like, I don't want to be happy. Stop playing this crap song. I didn't realize it's the lyrics are inspired by a famous saying from the late Indian mystic Mehar Baba. This is interesting. The track is completely a cappella, which I didn't really think about. You know, there's no drums. It's just all him singing.
Right, yeah. And he does, like, in the that's all him.
Right. So there's all that sort of background noise, which you think, oh, that might be a drum, that might be something. No, it's all him singing. Yep. And it's the only such song to ever hit number one on the Hot 100. And there's never been another a cappella song to ever hit number one.
Mm.
Didn't know that. All right, what do you think would be number 6 on the list?
I don't know. I mean, you have to give me a little something to go off of. Like, based on how you're putting context behind them is how I'm guessing. Hmm. So.
Well, here's another one. I mean, I loved this song. I couldn't wait for it to come on the radio.
And it's not Abracadabra, because that would be my next guess for
right.
you.
No, the lead singer died in a bus accident back in 1998. Mm. And it's largely sung in German. A lot of the song is sung in German.
Wow. Now, this isn't Rock Me Amadeus by Falco, is it?
Giddy up again. Huh. Rock Me Amadeus by Falco.
I don't think I knew that that was a bus accident that killed Falco.
It's the, and you look at the production, it's incredibly dated.
Or for the video.
Oh, yeah.
Right, oh, yeah.
Hit number one. I mean, what's amazing is a lot of these songs hit number one. 1986, the song hit number one.
Sure, yeah, the Amadeus soundtrack, that movie was a big deal, that song was a big deal. And you know, I just happen to know this. Actually, I had a friend who worked with me at a comic book store who was a Falco nut.
How do you become a Falco nut?
Like, he just knew everything about Falco. And it was always, you remember there was a... there's several different versions of this song, right? There's one that's sung all in German or Austrian German. You know, there's one that has like this extended 3-minute drum ending that's like ridiculous. But then there's the one which I think is typically referred to as radio edit, where there's this narration over the end of it, mm-hmm. you know? Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart is born in Salzburg, Austria. That one, the one that has the narration on the end, if you're looking for it, because when you find Rock Me Amadeus by Falco on 80s comps, you're always getting like the album version or the one off the soundtrack.
Right, the film version or the album version, right.
But the one that, if you know that one, right, like to hear it without that narration at the end, you know, Mozart composes the magic flute. If you're searching for that one, trying to find it to complete your 80s collection, I'm almost 99% certain it's the one that's tagged radio edit. That's the one that you want. And that's the one we all know.
Right.
I had left over from a camping trip that I went on in 1987, a mixtape left behind by someone of the hits that were on radio in the summer of 86. So, you know, I'd always, you know, I knew that radio edit of Falco. I just didn't know how to find it. And Falco did have some other hits. You know, Der Kommissar is his, even though it was more famously covered in the U.S. by the one-off band After the Fire. He also had Vienna Calling, which was another decent little Falco hit of his. So,
yeah, he had quite a few hits. And, you know, interestingly, this movie, well, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie. The movie's great.
Yeah.
Amadeus is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's funny that this song was associated with it, because it doesn't really fit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really fit at all, but the movie is wonderful, the wonderful story, and Salieri, and seeing the whole, you know, and whatever, what's his name, who's married to Hilary Swank, who plays Amadeus?
Oh, I couldn't
tell. Plays Mozart? God, I can't think of his name. He's that famous 80s actor. He's got like a baby face. It's going to kill me. Anyway, that's number six on the list. Can you guess number five? The album cover, I had this album. Mm. So I'm pretty sure.
You had the album. It's not Twisted Sister, is it? I know you had that one.
I had this album cover, and there's a yellow, well, you'll get this instantly. There's a yellow hard hat with, I think, with like a no smoking sign through it. Men Without Hats.
Right, sure, Men Without Hats. Now, I'm hoping it's Safety Dance has made the list, which I do find a bit annoying, because I'm a huge fan of their secondary hit, Pop Goes the World.
Right. It's Safety Dance. I mean, so many movies had those songs in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
But Safety Dance, yeah, this is the song. And, you know, to me, it's a guilty pleasure song. When I saw that this was on the list, I was a bit disappointed, because to me, this is a guilty pleasure song. I do enjoy it. And it to me, and it, you know, it does make me smile when I hear it, and when I get a little excited when I hear it come on. But to me, it doesn't rise to the level of being one of the worst of the 80s. But
right, yeah, that's too strong. I don't know that.
Do you remember that video too? It had like midgets and like some like Vienna, like Renaissance village.
Right, I do, because fairly recently I discovered that the on-demand menu on our cable system here has old episodes of pop-up video from VH1.
Oh, yeah.
And there are ones that are all only 80s songs. And, you know, I love knowing trivia about that kind of junk.
Right.
So I watched that, and I don't know that I'd ever really seen that video before. But it is a really peculiar video, and Clayton's right. It's set up to be like this Renaissance-era villa, and it's populated by little people, and, you know, the main guy from Men Without Hats singing, and it is a very strange video.
The fourth worst song of the 1980s, according to Rolling Stone's readers' poll, where they polled thousands of individuals, is Wham's Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
False.
Yeah,
false,
again,
I disagree.
Yeah. I disagree with that, too.
Yeah. Wham is high on anybody's guilty pleasure list, don't get me wrong, but
sure.
Just outright worst song? Come on.
And what would you say? I mean, my favorite Wham song is Everything She Wants.
I know you're a big fan of that. My favorite Wham song is The Edge of Heaven.
Hmm.
And I'll stand by that. I have no problem with that.
Number three on the list, and again, I don't know if I agree with this either. This is getting kind of close there. Of course, you know, one of the famous 2 years before the song came out, there was that Gene Wilder movie named The Woman in Red.
Mm. Lady in Red by Chris DeBerg.
Exactly.
Wow.
Chris DeBerg.
That seems like too strong a reaction to this too, right? This is a fairly inoffensive song. This is like junior high dance time, The Lady in Red by Chris DeBerg. Like what?
People refer to Chris DeBerg sort of as a poor man's Paul Carrick.
Really? That's very interesting to me. But major ups anytime Paul Carrick gets mentioned. I love right. Paul Carrick.
The song was in the movie, right? So 2 years before the song came out. No, it wasn't in there.
Yeah, that
because
I
two
don't
years
know that
before
be
the song came out, the Gene Wilder movie, The Woman in Red, hit theaters. So I don't know. That's weird. I always associated this song with that movie, but I guess it wasn't ever in the movie.
Yeah, he does have a lot of other hits in Europe. Chris DeBerg, really, here in the U.S., though, is only known for The Lady in Red. And, like, to be that high up the list, like, if we're making a list of, like, people's 100 least favorite 80s songs, all right, I can see that. But, like, number three of all the songs that were made in the 1980s, really? That's number three? All right, so what's at number two?
Number two, here's a hat tip and a wink to Arrested Development. I'm sure you'll get this with my clue. Arrested Development clue.
Wow. See, it's so far faded in my memory now.
Think of Job every time he does a magic trick.
Oh, wow. The Final Countdown by Survivor, right?
No, it's by Europe.
Oh, by Europe. Sorry. Yeah, Survivor does have some good hits, by the way. By Europe, yes.
Yeah, Eye of the Tiger, Survivor. But yeah, Europe, The Final Countdown. Of course, that famous cheesy keyboard.
Right, we're leaving for Venus. Wow, what the heck is this song about?
Right. I don't know. I mean,
it's about space
think?
Travel?
I really always sort of lump these bands together, right? Like Europe, Survivor, Asia.
Yep, I'm right. with you on that. Sometimes even Boston gets lumped in with them.
I was going to say so, yeah.
And you know who else? And this came up in the Guilty Pleasure stream this week, Toto. Because a lot of those bands, like the guys that, like, they almost have, like, you can't even identify who the front man is. They're
right.
bands made up of session players. Like, Toto, their lineup changes every album. It's just session players that want to do something other than, you know, backing somebody else up. They're making their own music. Like, because someone had mentioned Africa by Toto. Even Guiltier by Toto, by the way, I'll Be Over You. Totally awesome song.
Now, I love Africa by Toto.
Right?
I mean,
that was number one for – that had a really decent run, right, in 1985.
Yeah.
As did a lot of good Toto songs. And I like some of the songs by Survivor. I couldn't probably name you too many by Asia or Europe. It's tough because the Final Countdown in wrestling lives on in a weird way because – a guy who was a very popular independent wrestler named Bryan Danielson, who now wrestles for the WWE as Daniel Bryan, used that as his entrance theme. So it's sort of, you know, I almost associate it with like going to places where the fans who really knew him well, like they would sing every word of it as he was coming out, and it had this almost like euphoric experience when the Final Countdown came on, because it's used a great comedic effect in Arrested Development, right? It's sort of like the theme to Job as a loser magician is the Final Countdown. So it's an interesting contrast there. So that does beg the question, of course, what is the number one song on this list? Or we discussed this, right? Starship.
Right. Starship, We Built This City. is mm-hmm. the worst song of all time, according to the readers' poll from Rolling Stone.
Of the 80s, right?
Yeah, sorry. And I have to be clear, and what Rolling Stone says about this is you really, really hate this song. In fact, it crushed the competition. It wasn't even close, like the second, third, fourth, all the way down the line. No, number one by a landslide was Starships, We Built This City. And for me, of course, I'll always remember it from the soundtrack to Mannequin in the movie.
So it was there, too, because there's another Starship song that was in Mannequin.
Oh, there's another. I think
Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now.
Yeah, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. I think the song Sarah was also in Mannequin.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I didn't realize those were all from that soundtrack. Those are like all the Starship songs I like. Yeah. All of them right there.
Exactly. And, you know, We Built This City. I don't know. I can't. To me, it doesn't rise to the level of being the worst. I just don't get it. I don't understand why people. Maybe I have a certain cheese factor in some of the music I like. So, now in 2004, Blender named this the most awesomely bad song of all time. I remember that list. I remember you and I might have talked about that years ago before we ever did the Grizz. But 2004, Blender named it the worst song of all time. And I don't know why. What do you think is the why do you think this is hated?
I don't know. that really doesn't make much sense to me. Really, really bizarre. A couple things about this though, that are intriguing to me. Okay, We Built This City, and you know this was a number one, right? I mean, this was a massive hit for like what 85, 86. A couple things you need to know about it. Really bizarre people contributed to the writing of this song. Bernie Taupin. You know, longtime collaborator of Elton John.
Right.
Who's tough to knock as a songwriter, I'd like to point out.
Yeah, he's a co-writer. He was one of the lyricists. Yeah, he was a longtime lyricist. Did he pass away not too long ago?
Bernie Taupin?
I thought I remember hearing when he passed away. I know that Elton John, I mean,
nope.
Maybe.
No,
he's still alive.
He's still alive. And I just clicked over, by the way. Oddly looks like Elton John.
Right.
So it could be Elton John's stunt double. Bernie Taupin wrote this song. So did Martin Page, who, one of my favorite one-hit wonders of the 90s, he sings the song In the House of Stone and Light, which is one of my favorite wacky one-hit wonder 90s songs, who I think, and don't quote me on this, I think went on to have a career as like a Christian musician then.
Wait, who is this? Mickey Thomas?
Martin Page.
Oh, Martin Page.
And then also, who also wrote We Built This City, is another Austrian, right? Can you imagine? We got Falco and Peter Wolf. In the same episode here, like that's and Mozart, right? That's everything Austria has ever given us. But he's more of like a musical arranger. He also plays keyboards, by the way, does Peter Wolf. But he played on not only just We Built the City, and I'm just finding this out now. He played on Sarah by Starship, which is another song I like. He played on The Night Shift by the Commodores, which is another song I really like. He played on Everybody Have Fun Tonight by Wang Chung. He played Let's Go by Wang Chung, which is my favorite Wang Chung song. I'm throwing that out there. It was also the theme of the film Short Circuit, you might remember. Or no, I'm thinking of Who's Johnny, which he played on that as well, the El DeBarge song. He plays on Go West's big hit, King of Wishful Thinking. He played on These Dreams by Heart, which also went to number one.
Huh.
So what a bizarre, just absolutely bizarre collection of people. Bernie Taupin, Martin Page, Peter Wolf, all behind We Built This City, this monument. And so, yeah, well, the worst songs of the 80s? I don't get it. Like,
no. The only one I might agree with on this list, I mean, going back over, I would say Mickey by Tony Basil would stand out to me as one of the worst on here.
Mm-hmm.
Don't Worry, Be Happy. I could see that, too. But Tony Basil's Mickey, I'm not averse to Rick Astley either. I just, again, I think if we had to create a list, it would look something like this, right? Tony Basil's Mickey, 99 Luftballoons, She Blinded Me with Science.
Yeah, poor Thomas Dolby.
I would even go so far as to say Whip It by Devo.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sorry, Mark Mother's Ball. Like that one kind of.
What else?
You know. You know what? I think this one, maybe people like this more than they realize, I think. I was kind of surprised as you were saying some of these that True by Spandau Ballet was not in the mix.
Yeah, I think people just have a place for that in their heart. Maybe was that on the movie The Wedding Singer?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, right? Isn't that the song that the guy just keeps... No, he keeps singing Do You Really Want to Hurt Me by Culture Club or something.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I'm glad that it's easy to pick on people like Boy George, right? So I'm surprised there wasn't like Culture Club songs in here. And I would love to see the expanded list. You know, like what was number 11? What was number 12?
Right. I've been clicking around actually trying to find that. Instead, I found the 10 best REM songs.
Yeah.
I found that instead. But I was looking, wow, Driver 8 made it. I was trying to find that if there was like an expanded list. One of the things that makes this so difficult, one, of course, you know, Rolling Stone, who were just, they're wrong about everything, let's be honest here. It's trash journalism. It's just the absolute worst. Part of what makes it so difficult at times is, can you remember the name of this? This guy, he turns up on like every VH1 random commentary show. He's like this squirrely little nerd. You just, all of his opinions are wrong. Not that, you know, it's hard to say that opinions can be right or wrong, but this guy's just wrong. He's just dreadful. I think his name is Sheffield. And every once and again, like I'll read something about, like he wrote a very charming book called like Love is a Mixtape. And every once and again, you know, he might say something that you're almost like, I could almost agree with what you're saying, or, oh, you like that too? But then the rest of the time, everything that comes out of his mouth is just trash. You don't want to hear what the guy has to say. He's just like a buffoon. And for a long time, he was really high up at Rolling Stone. He also was at Spin magazine, if I'm not mistaken. And you just think, how is it that an idiot with such bad taste and rotten teeth, okay? And that's really the measure of a man, is it not?
Right.
Do you have good taste in music? What do your teeth look like? So now, part of what's distressing to me about this, though, is that it's the readers of Rolling Stone.
Right, exactly. That's why. So you can sort of give them a pass, right? Like that's why I thought I said it a couple of times because we, you know, are a version of Rolling Stone here on the show. So these were the. But then I guess if you're a reader of Rolling Stone, then I guess that says something about you as well.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
Anyway, so well, there you go. That
very was very that? Interesting. Did you? This I thought was an interesting choice. They have named Losing My Religion as the best REM song. That seems like a strange choice, but I was fascinated that number two was Night Swimming, which is really one of their most beautiful songs.
I was too. I was really surprised that that was number two on the list. I was surprised that Everybody Hurts was number three on the list. I mean, it is a beautiful song. But
that video is one of the most memorable videos of all time. Well, so is Losing My Religion, to be fair. But
sure.
That Everybody Hurts video is and my personal favorite clocked in at number four, Man on the Moon.
Yeah, Man on the Moon up high on the list, but there were and I'm glad Radio Free Europe made the list. Of course, that one of the iconic sort of you know that was the song that sort of changed everything for alternative music, right? I mean that was their bursting on the scene from the album Murmur, and you first hear that song come out of the gate, you're like, what is this band, you know? Fall on Me, of course, a classic on there. I think that's Michael Stipe's, one of his favorite songs. There were a few others. Driver 8 you'd mentioned.
Right, yeah. And Drive, which is one of my least favorite. Like, it's such a monotonous song to me, Drive.
I was really surprised that was on the list. Six on the list. It's the end of the world as we know it.
Sure. The One I Love had to be on there. There was no two ways about that.
Yeah, and that was about it. Yeah, that was... and the One I Love was number 10 on the list. So sad that REM has broken up. Well, I guess we should take a moment here and thank our show sponsor, our good friends over at Cobra Electronics, makers of the wonderful Cobra Eye Radar device. When you're on the road and traveling, you want to pair it with your smartphone. It's very, very easy to do. You got the radar detector plugged into your cigarette lighter. And then you've got the free app, the Cobra app that you've downloaded from the App Store, either on your Android device or on your iPhone. And it pairs with it over Bluetooth, so you get to see the alerts right on your smartphone screen. It's beautiful. It works so well. You get all those red light cameras. It lets you know about that. Lets you know where all the speed traps are. And it'll give you the different pop alerts, right? And as Mike always talks about, you're on the road and you're by yourself even. It kind of keeps you awake. It makes you a safer driver because you become more aware of what's going on around you on the road. I used to make the trip at like 1 in the morning from the Poconos down into Manhattan. I would do that while we were moving and, you know, or during the holidays. And boy, you want to be awake at those hours, right? You don't know what you're going to see. And so it's good to have that on because you get the little pop alerts, the different types of radar alerts that you're hitting on the road, and it just makes you a better driver. Well, they've also now come out with the Cobra Tag system that Mike is a big fan of because he loses his keys all the time.
You know, that is not true. Don't listen to
Don't tell
lies. I do not lose my keys. Okay? I do not.
You
do
lose
that.
Your wife's keys.
That's right. Yeah, and she's really quite angry about it. I think she's waiting for me to pick her up at the airport. The Cobra tag system, and this is really ideal with the holidays coming, because we all have those people that it's kind of like, well, this guy already has everything, or I don't know what to get for this girl here, right, whatever. This is a brand new innovation. There's nothing exactly like it, and it is ideal for that person. What you're going to do is, really what it does is like a two-way locator device. You put the little Cobra tag fob, I like to call it, on your keys. And then, using the free app that goes on your smartphone, you pair these two things up. So if one gets lost, let's say you can't find your smartphone anywhere, you use the fob on your keychain to call your phone to make it ring out so you can find it. It couldn't be, and it works in reverse too, by the way. And you can set it for all, there's all kinds of customizable features. That's what's great, and that's great about iRadar too. I like the fact that dashboard on the free app, I can customize it so I get exactly the information I want. This Cobra tag system, which is brand new from our friends over at Cobra, and you're going to find out, just if you go over to their website, you can go to Cobra.com. Of course, there's a sub-site, CobraiRadar.com, specifically for that. You can watch little demo videos about each of their products, and you'll find out very quickly why these guys are the industry leaders. There's nobody in front of the curve quite like Cobra. So here it is, right? It's mid-October already. You're starting to think, wow, am I behind already on my holiday shopping? You better go over and see our friends at Cobra. You can find all kinds of great Cobra goods online if you're shopping at Amazon.com. Also great retailers like Best Buy and a variety of others. And you can find out everywhere. If you're like one of those, you've got to brave the horror of retail by going to a shopping mall or something else. You can find great retailers where you can find Cobra products, or you can order them online, whatever the case might be. Whatever your preference, but as you're making up that holiday list, something to stick in the back of your mind is the Cobra tag, which is ideal for people who misplace their smartphone or keys, not like me.
So thanks to Cobra Electronics. We love you guys, and our audience does as well. Like one random fan who just, on your trip to North Dakota, which is so funny, he drove down from Saskatchewan to let you know that he was buying or just bought a Cobra iRadar. Mm-hmm. That's great. Love hearing those stories. You can always send them on Twitter. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter. You can tweet about it. Tweet about our sponsors, the things you're doing, the songs you like, whatever, or you just want to tell us your thoughts on the show. We'd love to hear about you, hear from you as well. So we should also mention here, before we get to our guilty pleasure song choice of the day, let's tell a little bit about what we're doing with the Sonos giveaway. We just gave one away on the Sports Report, hosted by Paul Roberts on our network. And great success. We had hundreds of people enter that contest. It's a $750 value. What do you get? You get the Play 3, which is their small, I think that's their smaller Sonos device. You get the Play 5, which is the larger Sonos. And you also get the Bridge device, which connects them all. And it works so well. So that's what you're getting. I mean, it is beautiful. Room-filling sound is the Sonos. So what I thought we'd do is, the best way to enter the contest, we have a brand new Facebook page. It's called Grizzly Productions. It's the Grizzly Productions Facebook page. It's the main page for everything we do here at the network. Mm. Number one, you have to like the page. So we can tell who likes it, who doesn't. You just need to go over and click on it and like the page so you become friends. And basically, the benefit to you is that anytime a new show is published, we publish it there so you'll know that a new show is ready to go on our network. Anything from Daddy on Board to the Sports Report, you name it, it's all there. You can comment on shows, you can tell us what you like, you can tell us what you don't like. So you need to like us on Facebook. Then we're going to start a thread. We're going to start a comment thread asking you the trivia question which Mike has plucked forth from one of our episodes of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. All you need to do is go and listen to that particular episode to get the answer. You'll post the answer on the page and we will select a winner at random. Should we extend this for 2 weeks or should we do it for 1 week? What do you think?
I think we should just do it for 1 week. The pressure's on.
Okay, 1 week. So we'll announce a winner next week on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. So you've got 1 week, midnight, Tuesday of next week. You have until midnight of Tuesday, Monday of next week to answer the question. Monday of next week to answer the question.
Mm-hmm. Very confusing.
Yeah.
So here it is. You're going to have to go back. I don't know the episode number. But It's the episode where John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants joins us. You're going to have to go back and find that one. In the course of that interview, we ask John Flansburgh if there were any underground comic books that he read. He mentions one comic book creator by name in his response. Do you know who I'm talking about? You're going to need to if you want to win this Sonos.
So like us on Facebook, our Grizzly Productions Facebook page, and on that very same page, we'll start a comment thread asking you that trivia question. You answer it, and you'll be entered, and we'll be selecting you at random to win a brand new Sonos system worth $750. And we've given away some great stuff here on the Grizz before, so you know we come through, and we deliver, and Sonos is the top of the line.
Mm. Right on. Good luck, loyal Egghead Army. So, before we get going, I want to tell you very quickly about some exciting things that we have upcoming. Probably in another week or two, we're going to be joined here on the program, with Clayton and I, by our friends from the forthcoming podcast, The Weekly Long Box. More information about that probably in next week's episode. So, that is soon to roll out from your friends here at Grizzly Productions, a new comic book-centric podcast. The Weekly Long Box is coming your way in short order. You know, of course, you can follow us, not just Grizzly Productions, which is at Grizzly Produced on Twitter, but you can follow this show, Grizzly Bear Cafe. You can follow Clayton. He's at Clayton Morris. You can follow me. I'm at Mike Quackenbush. We appreciate your follows, and, of course, that's the best way to send us your song suggestions for Guilty Pleasures, things like that. I also want to advise you of something very big upcoming. As you know, Chikara Podcast A Go-Go, one of the many great podcasts here in the Grizzly Productions Network. Well, Chikara is coming to iPay-Per-View through GoFight Live TV. That's GFL.TV. You can go over there right now and order the iPay-Per-View, or come see us live at the former ECW Arena in Philadelphia on Sunday afternoon, November 13th. Yours truly will be wrestling in the main event opposite Eddie Kingston to crown the very first grand champion of Chikara. All that and a whole lot more at an event called High Noon. Find out everything you need to know at chikarapro.com. And as I said, worldwide, you can order right now through gfl.tv. Don't miss High Noon by us over at Chikara. Now, without further ado, I have found a Guilty Pleasure song selection, Clayton, that I think is a fine choice.
Well, I usually support your choices. Mm-hmm. So, I usually support them.
We did have some good suggestions come in. This one in particular struck me because I did not realize who this artist was. Green Pig TX, perhaps that's the state abbreviation for Texas, sent in the 1977 number one hit. We also won a Grammy, if I'm not mistaken. You Make Me Feel Like Dancing, which has been revisited by the Wiggles, of all people. It's been covered by a lot of people. But when the Wiggles did it, they got the original artist to come in and sing it for them. They just danced behind him. And that artist is Leo Sayer.
Right, right.
Now, Leo Sayer, of course, to 80s music fans like Clayton and I, he's best known for, he had a big hit called More Than I Can Say. But the reality is he's had tons of hits over the years. He recently relocated to Australia. He's now, as of 2009, he's been a naturalized Australian citizen, which is no doubt why the Wiggles like him so much. They're from Australia. So here is his Grammy Award-winning 1977 number one hit and an absolute windows-up guilty pleasure. This is Leo Sayer, You Make Me Feel Like Dancing.